We made this.
That's 2 times 10. So naturally it means it's time for me to be the guest and pick the disc. And by me, I mean Matt Latham, I'm your host to pick a disc. Well, no, actually, I'm the guest. I'm not used to this yet, this is only the second time I've done this. The host this week is Colin from We Dig Music, who you may remember all the way back from episode 4 when we did Bright Eyes. And Ollie picked the disc. I won't reveal it because you've probably seen it already on the podcast app of choice or the website or wherever you may be hearing this podcast. Anyway, we talk about The Streets of Grandad Come For Free. I love the album and you'll find out why later on. We talk about Mike Skinner, we talk about the writing, and we talk about the actual concept of the album and the story it tells and a whole lot more. The only way to find out what that lot more is to carry on listening. Now, before I unleash the interview that Colin and I did, don't forget to do all the usual stuff, you know, as like if you're listening to this for the first time, subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice. I think we're on most of them, I think. Let me know if we're not. And also, don't forget to rate us on iTunes because everyone has to say that. I got no idea what it means. Something about stars and saying good things, you know. Opinion fraud, that's the word I like to use. Anyway, let's talk to Colin.
I'm not Matt Latham. I'm Colin. We are in a parallel universe.
This is kind of weird.
It is.
Yeah.
It's like the pick a disc in the Bizarro universe.
Yeah.
Matt, you get to choose.
I know, this is weird. It's happened once before and it's still kind of weird.
It has.
Yeah, I feel weird being asked questions. It's not...
Well, get used to it because we're going to be doing it for the next foreseeable bit of the future. Which album have you chosen?
So, Colin, I have chosen A Grand Don't Come For Free by The Streets.
An excellent choice.
Of course.
Why?
Why? Well, it's probably the reason I want to do this podcast.
Excellent. That sounds good enough to me.
Yeah, because like...
20 episodes in, so...
Yeah. I mean, I would have picked this as number 10, but I thought, now there's a couple of albums that I'm going to try and hold the fire on, and I thought...
In case you stop.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons for me picking is that because it's basically to encourage me to... At least do a 10.
Keep going.
Yeah, keep going. But this one, I think there's just so much with it. I think it's... I'm making the argument that it's The Streets' best album. It's neck and neck, admittedly, with other albums I have. But but with this one, I think there's just something about it that invites re-listening. Every time I've re-listened to it, I've discovered something new. I've got new interpretations of it.
Yeah.
And whilst some of it's dated in terms of what happens in it or what's described in it,
yes,
technology wise, there are still bits that seem relevant today. And whether it's accidental on Mike Skinner's part, I don't know, but it's very much, it still has parts that feel relevant. And I just seem to discover new things about it every time I listen.
I would imagine that's probably accidental unless he is a fortune teller.
True, yes.
Because he probably wouldn't know what it's going to be like 15 years later.
Yeah. But...
So, yeah, A Grand Don't Come For Free came out in May 2004. Did you get it at the time? How did you first hear it and when?
I think basically as it was, as a not-so-ghetto youth as I was, obviously. I must have brought up that I was quite into the rap music back then.
Yeah.
And pretty much anything that had rap elements to it, I was really into.
What kind of thing? What other things were you listening to at the time?
Well, the first one is like basically Eminem. I was really into Eminem. Strangely, particularly discovering peer-to-peer networking sites, kind of started discovering other kind of rappers. And the one song I always remember was The Crossroads by Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Right, I'm so glad you didn't say Blazing Squad.
That's it. I mean, Blazing Squad came up last Saturday when I recorded the next episode, which is kind of weird, but
Time is going backwards.
Yeah, Bone Thugs and Harmony I got really into. There was very much into like Triple Time, very fast-paced, rapping kind of stuff. And and pretty much anything I could get my hands on, really, and like kind of more obscure stuff. And at Christmas, I'd be getting like CDs like Crazy Bone, Thug Mentality 1999. And to this day, I really wish I was in the shop when my mum bought it. Because that was giving a list that goes, excuse me, do you have Crazy Bone, Thug Mentality 1999? But pretty much at that time, the biggest way to listen to music properly, because I still had like dial up and this basically was,
I believe we all did.
Yeah. Sky Digital had at the time, I think it was 440 onwards, was like MTV, MTV2, MTV Bass and stuff. And occasionally you'd never clock on that every time there's an advert, so you flick over trying to watch something else rather than the advert, not realising they somehow timed all the adverts at the same time. But occasionally you'd just be flicking through and then you see Keep It To A Song that you like. And I remember Has It Come To This was on MTV Bass.
Right, okay.
And that was like, and I'm sure that was just when it first came out.
Yeah.
And I remember really liking that song for some reason, and I thought, like, it very sounds very weird when he's rapping, but it's a niche novelty thing. And and I can't remember when I got the original Pirate Material.
Did you get it first? You got that when, roughly when it came out, and then...
I don't know, because I have this vivid memory. I mean, vivid of, like, I was in the sixth form common room, like, in the first few days of sixth form, and there was playing... I think, a song which turned out to be The Irony of It All.
Okay.
And listened to that, and I'm like, oh, is this The Streets? And it's like the Streets album stuff, and like, oh, okay. And then, like, basically, it was like a mix CD. And then, basically, I think Big Papa by George B.I.G. came in.
Excellent.
And I went, oh, yes, this. And like, basically, being like the one that's seen as a nerd, these like people from the other side of the other half of the school, because that's like the school split the 2 years.
Matt, I can't imagine that you, as a podcaster, was seen as a nerd. We weren't nerds.
Yeah, contrary to what he says. But yeah, it was like, and like, it's like, you know who Notorious B.I.G. is? Like, duh. And like, but then, and I can't remember exactly. I do remember getting the album. I can't remember when. I think it was after that.
Okay.
And I want to say that I bought A Grand Uncle for free in around 2005 or 2004.
Okay.
I can't remember. But I do know that I got it from Asda with another album.
Okay.
Which might be my number one album of all time, or once was, and is still in my top, like, possibly top three.
Okay.
Which was Sam's Town by The Killers.
Ah.
And I bought it at the same time.
Yeah,
And I remember listening to Grand Album 3, and then like listening a few times, I was like, oh, I really like how stories this is going and stuff. And at the time, I was really into kind of writing, and particularly I was developing script writing and stuff. And so I'm really into the storytelling aspect of things. I mean, and I'm assuming if you've listened to the podcast, when I listen to music, I'm very weak on the musical side. So I'm surprised no one's picked up on this yet, but I do talk about the lyrical content more than the musical thing of, and I think eventually I'm hoping that I can...
I'll cover that side today, it's fine.
Yeah, but this is just like someone who's really into the lyrical side of stuff, listening to stuff, and particularly like rap. This is like a godsend, and it kind of... And I just loved how it all connected together.
Yeah.
And it's probably ruined what I think concept albums should be. So when like people say, oh, this is a concept album, it's like, no, it ain't. A proper concept album.
There's different types of concept albums.
Yeah.
So... only some concept albums have a narrative story throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're just... Tori Amos' Strange Little Girls is a concept album because it's the concept is that they're covers of songs originally written by men about women, and she's subverting that by being a woman, turning it back the other way. So you've got things like Eminem's 97 Bonnie and Clyde on there, which she makes really fucking creepy. But, yeah, basically, a narrative concept album.
Yeah.
I think is probably the best kind of descriptor for this.
I've heard it, I've read it being described as a rap opera.
Yes, or a hip-hopera.
Or a hip-hopera.
Which I think is a better...
That's a nice term. Yeah.
I just want to say how I got it. I was working in a record shop at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work in Virgin Megastore in Tamworth, and we had a promo copy in, which we didn't get very often. We normally just had to play the CDs that we had in the shop on the shelves. But because obviously it was an album that the record label were pushing, but the CD had loads of swearing in it, they'd made a radio edit version.
Okay.
And sent that as a promo so it could still be played in shops. And so I was in the back room at the time pricing up all the new releases when that came in. Thought, oh, I liked a couple of the tracks off the previous record. I'll put it on, listened to it, and immediately wrote my name on the back of it so that I could claim it. Because when promos came in, basically whoever claimed it first got to keep it. So that was mine. But it did mean that for years, I didn't hear the version with swearing in it. It's just got bits of silence.
So it was basically track 8, such a...
Yeah. It was such a... I think before we go much further into talking about the album itself...
Yeah.
As an unprecedented kind of thing, I think we need to do a spoiler warning.
Yes.
If you've not heard A Grand Don't Come For Free and you care about storylines of things... And
yeah.
You're the kind of person that has to watch Peaky Blinders the night it's on in case somebody tells you what happens in it... press pause on your podcast app, go and listen to it. It'll only take you like 55 minutes.
It might take you 100 because you'll have to listen to it again, unfortunately.
Which is true. Because
it's one of those hours.
It is great.
Yeah.
But then come back afterwards, please, because otherwise that'd be rubbish. And then, but if not, if you've not heard it and you carry on, it's on you.
Yeah.
Because there are twists in the tale.
Yeah, there's plot spoilers. It's.
So, going back to concept albums, are there any other albums that you particularly like that would be described as a concept album that you can think of?
Not really. I mean, you've got albums with themes, and I can't really think off the top of my head of anything that constitutes a concept album. Loosely, I mean, I'm looking at my... like
wall of albums.
Wall of albums with my 42 favourite albums of all time. And the only ones on there that I can even conceive as being even concept-y are probably only like the Eminem Show. If I start talking about that, I'll go on forever. But that's kind of like the end of a trilogy of kind of a concept of exploring oneself. But it's not as like it's not like this. This is like a fictional story.
Yeah.
Told in the first person.
But there's a narrative arc to it of the three albums.
Yeah.
A little bit like Marilyn Manson did with Antichrist Superstar, Mechanical Animals and Hollywood.
Okay.
Which, you know, those two have worked together.
The only one I'll probably listen to a few times, but I don't really think much of it, is American Idiot by Green Day, because that's got kind of like a semblance.
Oh, it's a rock opera,
yeah.
You know, particularly with the multi-part songs on it, like Jesus Suburbia and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, even as a big Green Day fan, I don't listen to it very often.
Hmm.
One I did think of actually earlier that I think you might like. Have you ever heard The Hazards of Love by the Decemberists?
No.
I think you did that.
Okay.
Worth a listen.
I have actually watched the Decemberists, I think, live.
Yeah.
And I think it was... their latest, the album at the time, I can't remember what it was called. But, I mean, I did quite like it, but I never delved into them, so I'll have to do that one.
Okay. Yeah, so do you want to tell us a little bit, give people a summary of the basic storyline?
Yeah, it's like, basically, I think it's a guy in perhaps his, I'm going to say mid to late 20s.
I reckon early 20s.
Early 20s.
I would say.
I wouldn't say that early, I would have said at least pushing 24, 25.
We'll go with that.
Yeah.
We'll go
with that. Who ends up meeting a girl through a friend of his. There's a romance that blossoms. At the same time, he seems to go through some kind of philosophical self-reevaluation at the time.
It's almost like a coming-of-age sort of story, isn't it?
Yeah, and they kind of, like, grow together. They kind of have, like, a massive argument. He goes on holiday, eyes up a girl, and then sleeps with the girl, comes back, and pretty much ends up, like, finding out that the girl was, like, sleeping with his best friends anyway.
But throughout the whole time, there's he's thinking that everything's going wrong for him. I mean, the first track of the album, It's Supposed to Be So Easy, is a catalogue of a list of things going wrong for him on that day.
Yeah.
Including going to the cash machine and having insufficient funds, losing... He's got the title of the album, A Grand Don't Come For Free, he's got £1,000 saved up somewhere, which he's just kept in a shoebox in his flat, which has gone missing.
Yeah.
And he's suspecting that he's got two best mates.
Yeah. Dan and Scott.
Dan and Scott. And he's suspicious that one of those may have nicked it.
Yeah.
And...
it kind of acts as like the MacGuffin of...
It is, It's kind of like the rosebud of the story.
Yeah, yeah. But there's like all these kind of elements that kind of play in the background, so there's bits like...
his TV's broken.
Yeah,
You know, he's... there's a bit where when he's lost the money, he's trying to win it all back by gambling. There's a track called Not Addicted, which is all about him betting money on the football but not knowing anything about football and being quite rubbish at it. And then having being absolutely sure that he's going to have a windfall.
Yeah.
Being really annoyed with himself because he didn't put the bet on in time.
Mm-hmm.
And then finding out that he would have lost all of his money anyway.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it earlier. And, I mean, it's an ultra-realistic story about how a lot of people, at the time, life was.
Yeah.
Now, mine wasn't like it.
Neither was mine.
I was not going out... you know, doing loads of drugs, going out clubbing and stuff like that. Because, as Matt alluded to earlier, we're podcasters, we're fucking nerds.
Yes.
I was going to the pub and hanging out with friends, but that was about as far as it kind of went with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got friends who are really similar to some of the characters in this.
Yeah.
And I know people that... a lot of it's really relatable, even if you haven't been that close to... all of the storylines, but you, even if you haven't yourself, you'll know people that have. But I think it's so much of its time because there are little things that tie it to 2004.
Yeah.
That as technology and time has progressed, it now maybe isn't as relatable. And I was listening to another podcast the other day, which was done by some young kids that are about 19 or 20, who... were saying how it was a completely unrealistic, unrelatable story. So, just a generation's difference. It's completely passes people by. Whereas, for me, I'm sitting there thinking it's one of the most like, realistic slice of life type. What it reminds me of is like those, those like kitchen sink dramas?
Yes.
And like the old like Play for Today and stuff like that. The kind of thing that... Morrissey used to be obsessed with and go on about and have pictures on the front of the Smiths albums.
Yeah.
That was his obsession. It's such a realistic album, but at the same time, it's a compelling story.
Yeah.
That just keeps going with it. I mean, you were saying about the, when you got into it at the time, the sort of like you were into script writing.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. Did it inspire you with your script writing, do you think?
Not really. No, I think it was just more the fact that I just really like kind of delve into something and kind of seeing how stories break down. It was probably at least about 10 years after first listening to it, where I pretty much had a blog that was about TV reviewing.
So okay.
I used to like have a TV related blog before I decided to do a podcast about music, which is
diversifying your interests.
Yeah, but I had blogs and like live journals and all that kind of crap before, where I used to talk about TV and stories and trying to read into stuff, and I always felt, and I just, and like perhaps wasn't as much into music as I was now, but with that I just kind of felt like I could delve into it and like see all this narrative, and it just kind of like it makes great payoffs later on. And it's just that when you re-listen to it, you can see him kind of lay little small things that you didn't realise would pay off later on. Yeah. And then you listen to it for a third time and it just goes, oh yeah, and there's that and that and that, and there's
Chekhov's broken TV.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like, and it's just like, I mean, when I'm saying like the way it's performed as well, and like one of the things I've only noticed until this morning, and pretty much as I came back here about like an hour before you turned up,
yeah,
I was like, whilst rushing to cook me dinner and get changed and everything, I pretty much went through and found that one of his storytelling techniques is that before What Is He Thinking, every mention of Dan as a character, which hits on the last line of the beat, deliberately breaks any rhyme scheme.
Oh.
So, for example, okay, the whole first verse could well be in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to recite all this now.
Okay.
Because her last relationship effed her up, got hurt majorly, finds it tough to trust, looked at the ashtray then looked back up, spinning away on the tabletop. She looks much fitter than Saturday just. She worked in JD's with Dan. Back then she figured she was pretty damn rough, but she was only wearing her work stuff, and his clothes she looked more than buff. Now, the thing that breaks the rhyme scheme is Dan at the end of the one line.
That is insane.
And it's a smaller verse, so I won't be rapping the whole thing. Blinded by the lights, the second time. Yeah, yeah, they cheer. Can they see my hand in the air? I need to wave them while they're here. I swear some man's kissing Dan. My head's twisted severe, body rushing everywhere. They could have texted me when they were near, but I'm effed and I don't care. Again, in the rhythm, the word, the name Dan breaks the rhyming.
That has literally blown my mind.
Yeah.
Going back to the spoilery thing, Dan is the hidden baddie in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that kind of foreshadowing. I think Mike Skinner might be an actual genius.
Yeah.
I was reading a Guardian article at the time, which was written by, university lecturer from Caltech and University of London Union, John Sutherland, where he compared him to Dostoevsky, Samuel Pepys, and he also said that the whole... he'd got this really pretentious bit that was like, and of course, pretty much anybody that's reading this will know straight away that the storyline of the album is based on the Bible's parable of the lost coin.
That was and what I was thinking of.
Me being not a particularly religious person went, what? So I looked it up. And the parable of the lost coin is a story about a woman who loses a coin. She's got 10 silver coins and she loses one of them and looks all over her house and then finds it again. That's pretty much it, according to the internet that I found earlier. So I think as that's in the Bible, I think that means that technically Mike Skinner is a better storyteller than God. And I'm sticking by that. I would much rather listen to A Grand Don't Come For Free than a Bible audiobook anyway.
You just grab the gold, grab the extra myrrh, grab the Frankenstein, then hurry. But it's that kind of thing. And again, it took me, 15 years to realise that. And the only reason I got that was that... I got that because
were you writing it down or something to notice?
No, I was just listening. I was just listening to it, and then I was just listening to it because and then random like yesterday, I was like kind of reading the Genius Notes, and someone says that for humorous emphasis, the rhyme breaks for Dan and stuff, and I'm okay. And I just see, like when I was random commenters, and then I was just
so
listening.
Subtle.
But then I was listening to it, but it's like the last year or so, the last couple of years or so, I've gotten really into. And like watching kind of these like genius videos or these guys where people will go through and assess all these rhyme schemes and stuff.
Okay.
And because the technical side of rap also has always fascinated me in terms of how people layer on rhymes and stuff. And I was like, and after reading that, I was listening to that verse, I'm like, that doesn't fit. And I think the ah sound in Dan. The "an" sound kind of appears a couple of times, but doesn't get overly stressed. And I think the only time it kind of really kicks in is during "What Is He Thinking" at the end, where he kind of builds up and stuff. And I think I think it turns up in "Fit But You Know It," but he doesn't kind of use it overly as a rhyming sound until it's kind of needed. And he only throws in the "an" sound just to break up.
Yeah,
and
so that's a. An amazingly sort of a detail that he's put in there with the lyrics.
Yeah.
But you possibly may not have picked up as much because you said at the start you don't tend to notice the musical side.
Yeah.
There's a couple of tracks on the album that where the music evolves in a sort of really interesting way.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple that are obvious, but the one I was sort of analysing myself earlier was Blinded by the Lights. Which Blinded by the Lights is a track. The part of the story is he's in a club And he's waiting for Simone, his girlfriend, and Dan to arrive. He keeps having to, you know, he's checking his phone for text messages. That's a thing that, you know, a club now, I would imagine, I don't go to clubs very often, but I would imagine it'd probably have Wi-Fi, so it'd be checking WhatsApp.
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, one of the parties, and I actually remember doing this as well, was like you'd be there and then you'll have no signal and you'd have to go out. And like,
just
and,
to get bars on your phone.
Yeah. And like, it's not just a case of, oh, you had to go to the smoking area. There wasn't a smoking area back then. This was like
the smoking area was the club.
Yeah. Because like, this was 3 years before the smoking ban as well. Yeah. So like, you'd have to go out. Like, you'd go through like a mass amount of smoke because you pretty much, everyone was going out there to kind of breathe fresh air before you head back into the smoking area. But, and it's like, it's that kind of stuff where like, he's reliance on phones is another thing that kids have been through as well. And like, but again, that's...
But it's phones used as actual phones or for texting.
Yeah, but I think it's quite like an analogy for trying to use it as an excuse to like lack communication as well.
Cause
like, so like there's a few times where he keeps swearing, get his phone.
Yeah.
And like miscommunication and all that kind of stuff.
So, Blinded by the Lights, he's in this club. And while he's there waiting for his friends and his girlfriend to turn up, he's got some ecstasy with him.
Yeah.
So he decides to take it. And first of all, it's not working. And then it slowly starts kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
And musically, the track's quite sparse to start with. And it's almost sort of represented by the drums. Because you've got this... there's this pulsing synth sound throughout the whole sort of thing is the main melody.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a really quiet, very fast hi-hat on the drum beat at the start that's really low in the mix and quite sort of regimented and like tight kind of thing where he's sober. And as he gets, as the drugs kick in, there's a ride cymbal, which is a bit slower, comes in. Well, it's same tempo, but it's on less beats. That's a lot more sort of airy and sort of flowing. So it's as if the drugs are taking over, and you know, I've got some more chemically inclined friends who've told me that that song is incredibly realistic. I've never found out myself. Don't ever intend to. But no, it's
the same.
But don't do drugs, kids.
Yeah, it's. What, and particularly that one as well, is that he kind of like, you can kind of hear him kind of drift as his vocal kind of, his usual kind of, he's got a very, I can't remember what the term is, but his delivery is like quite unique, but it's very kind of stuttery, stop start.
Staccato.
Yeah, staccato, that's it.
Yeah. And he's slurring it more, which would be legato.
Yeah, I mean like, he's like, if you ever want a demonstration of how to, of what rap sounds like without any flow, Mike Skinner is your man. But then he kind of manages to use it as like his greatest weapon. But like, it's just his vocal delivery of that as well, as he starts getting in, you can feel him swaying because the music and like there's that like synth riff that keeps playing for 5 minutes straight.
Yeah.
And it's,
well, there's a bit as it's kicking in where they it just stays on one note for a little bit, and they're messing with the cutoff and the resonance on the synth, so it's it kind of sort of mutes it, and then it comes back in as basically like the sort of the beat drops and the high takes off kind of thing, which is the bit where he says, "I'm mashed."
And there's the less subtle but still equally great was when there's an extra like kind of like dramatic synth that comes in when Scott comes and the. But that this mate's been shagging, and it comes in on that ass sound, as, again, going back to the rhyming with Dan.
Yeah, it's like a string stab sort
And it's, again, it's on the sound, the rhyming sound, that matches the sound of the name Dan.
Oh, Dan.
Yeah. Again, and it's like the chat, Dan, and it's like, ugh.
I'm speechless by how insane that is. And
didn't I say that you'll always learn something new about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been picking up bits this week. I mean, because there's little bits of, like, background talking and stuff behind the vocals on the tracks all over the album.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favourite bits on there is, so you've got Get Out of My House, which is the track where he has the big fight with Simone.
Yeah.
And it's MC Simone is the vocalist on most of the track, and it's the two of them having this big argument. And all the time she's having a go at him, he's there going, yeah, calm down, what are you talking about? Sort of like just lowering the mix behind it. And then right at the end, he's sort of trailing off and just sort of muttering. And it's got one of my favourite, because there's so many really funny bits on the album as well.
Yeah.
And they've just got his, like, a stream of consciousness where he's sort of, he says, it's hard enough to remember my opinions without remembering my reasons for them. Which is probably my favourite lyric on the album.
Yeah. it's just even like an aside that's on its own and stuff.
Yeah.
But like, there's, and again, talking with the humour, like if I like to move on to the, not the hit, like the second biggest hit, Fit But You Know It, which was like, it's just like the summer track.
It was the lead single, wasn't it? Yeah, that came out before the album.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, and then you've got kind of stuff, well, I don't think it's on the single bit, but you've got like bits at the end where it's like, I think I'm going to fall over.
Yeah. What are sort of your favourite and least favourite songs on the album? Have you...
If I'm going to go for least favourite, but it's really tough because I really like them all. The one I like the least, but again, as I've tried to reassess it as I've grown up and figured its place, was Not Addicted.
Yeah.
Mainly because I couldn't, for the life of me, figure out its place in the story arc. Because it
doesn't fit as well, does it?
No, it doesn't fit. But what I think it does, thinking about it, and again, this is like about a year or so ago, I ended up, a year and a half ago, I ended up going through a retrospective and writing articles about all five Streets albums for a site called Set the Tape, which was set up by the Lord and Master Tony Black of We Made This. And I went through, this was in the lead-up, basically, for when I went to go and see him live Birmingham, which I'll talk about later on. And Not Addicted, I think, is the character-based song, which I think when I started trying to think about it more, because I was trying to figure out why it was there, and...
He's the main character, so he needs more songs to establish who he is rather than what's happening.
But what I think it does, it shows you the type of character he is, and I think it kind of has a knock-on effect in that an interpretation you can get is whether the narration of the story is reliable and whether Mike Skinner himself is an unreliable narrator, and you kind of... Because when you first listen to it, you think, oh man, this person, like, she's a bit, like... Don't know, like Donny Marver and stuff. But then when you listen to it again, I mean, technically they both kind of cheat on each other.
Yes.
Yeah. He's not the world's most proactive person.
No.
No. Yeah. He seems to want to get. He wants to get something. He says a grand don't come for free, but it's never really established how he got that grand.
No.
Yeah.
I read a thing earlier that because the first bit in It Was Supposed to Be So Easy, part of it is he needs to talk to his mum. And I read something in one of the reviews of it where that person had interpreted that this money was some that his mum had given him.
Yeah.
As like a nest egg sort of thing to try and maybe, you know, do something worthwhile, which he probably... You get the impression from the character he probably wasn't going to, you know, invest it in stocks and shares.
Yeah.
You know, the character is most likely going to have spent it on cocaine, weed, and alcohol.
Yeah, but then you get like kind of the impression that, I mean, like the first line of Could Well Be In is that her first relationship.
But they're up.
Yeah, they're up, and
I'm not scared of swearing.
Yeah,
you've heard my podcast.
Yeah, basically, like fudged her up and. I don't know if it's like quoting, but and like I think, so I mean, like there's the argument made that kind of she's reacting or expecting the worst from people because, like, because you don't know what this history of this character is and stuff. And,
sure,
yeah, and this is what happens when you listen to it to like the 50th time when you start to assess it and stuff. And I just thinking about it, like again, it gave me another excuse to re-listen to it and think that he's not like the main hero. Well, he's the protagonist, but not the hero we think he is. He's kind of, and like perhaps he kind of sets himself up to like kind of fail as well. Because like, I mean, again, but then you come back and say, well, technically, if Dan and Simone had been having an affair like all the way back from the fourth episode, or even
beforehand, they worked together at JD Sports, as it said right in the second song of the album. So he's like, known her longer. They might have been together even before that. But
yeah, I mean, but then like, I mean, he doesn't seem to. Presented himself in the best light anyway. I mean, again, I think wouldn't have it any other way. All he seems to do is just sit there watching TV and doing nothing. Just.
But at the same time, it probably wouldn't have been picked up on at the time. But he's demonstrating a lot of symptoms of anxiety and depression.
Okay.
Particularly, I mean, the first track, It Was Supposed to Be So Easy, which is all about how he fucks everything up.
Yeah.
And even the simplest task he knows he's going to fuck up, which is almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Where you know, everything he's doing, yeah, he's kind of left things till the last minute, so he's got to run to the to Blockbusters or wherever it is to take the DVD back, but he's left it in the DVD player. That's not the worst thing ever. Yeah. But he treats it as if it is, because yeah. he's catastrophizing.
Yeah.
And you've even got a bit in that song where he thinks he's lost his phone and he gets really angry with himself, and he hasn't. It's in his pocket.
Yeah.
Which is a kind of thing that is a symptom of anxiety and depression. You're thinking that you're going to do the worst, so you're expecting, oh, I've probably lost it, and you haven't. And then from there, the whole, yes, he may well be lazy, but a lot of it might well be that he feels that sometimes it's just difficult for him to get up and do things.
Mm.
So there could be that side of things.
It okay. would
almost certainly not have been picked up in 2004, though.
Oh, okay. The other big thing that I picked up on this, and I think it's the bit that I kind of latched onto, I think afterwards, there's a big thing about, is that I think it's a quest for kind of self-realisation and empathy as well.
Yeah.
Where, like, a lot of, and I think I remember me having this mindset quite a lot, particularly in my teenage years, like basically everyone just doesn't care about you. Why bother? All this kind of stuff.
And
no one gives a crap about you. Like, no one really cares or something. Why should I bother with blah, 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 blah?
Yeah.
But the, I don't want to bring up empty cans just yet. But,
I know what you're talking about.
But there's, but then, like, there's a bit.
They've had a spoiler warning. It's fine. Yeah. Bring it up.
There's a bit in empty cans. I mean, like, it feels weird to jump into this bit of the empty cans, because there's a whole other section about empty cans. It's like, no one's there fighting for you in the last garrison. No one except yourself, that is. No one accepts you. You're the one who's got your back until the last deed's done. Scott can't have my back until the absolute end, because he's got to look out for what are over his horizon. He's got to make sure he's not lonely, not broke. It's enough to worry about his home, keeping his own head above. And I think one of the things that, particularly personally as well, is that I think I made that realisation a lot later than perhaps I should have done in my personal life. But I think that is, I do think one of the key signs of maturity in people is that you've gained some kind of empathy in that, like, once you realise the world doesn't revolve around you and that people have got their own kind of things to do, then yeah. I think you're a bit more gradually accepting of other people. And the song itself, for reasons we'll talk to about, kind of helps boost that momentum and stuff. And I remember about 6-7 years after listening to this album, where I kind of made that realisation myself, it's like on a personal level. And
yeah.
Again, it kind of gave me another reason to connect to the album and
yeah.
another layer to it again, and basically running out of fingers counting how many times it's happened with this album. And again, I kind of, it's like a self-awareness of what's happened
yeah.
to him and stuff. And
I mean, overall, it was going back to when we were sort of debating about how old the character is at the start.
Yeah.
Yes, he's an adult. He's got his own flat and everything, but he's not a grown-up yet.
Yeah.
See, I mean, to be fair, I'm 37 and I'm not a grown-up yet, and I'm married with a kid, but, you know.
Well, see, I think it was the wrong side of the mid-20s, when I think the mid-20s where I've kind of clicked with that.
Yeah,
and I think that's probably why, I think, reflecting on it, that's why I've always thought the characters around that age anyway. Yeah. So.
You've basically just said a bit about personal stories or memories. Have you got any other sort of personal stories or memories that you associate with the album?
Not really. I mean, not much from that, but I think it's that emotional kind of connection of, like, self-awareness that I kind of, like, mirrored that I had and stuff.
Yeah.
And the, kind of, like, the philosophical side of it, which, I mean, in other albums, Skinner's, like, shown quite a lot of interest in.
I was just about to say that. It's on the outset, if you just look at him and have a... You just listen to Fit But You Know It or something like that.
Yeah.
People wouldn't see him as a deep philosophical character.
Yeah.
But I mean, on a two albums later, Everything Is Borrowed, is all about philosophical and self-awareness and you know, optimism and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful album. There's a track called On the Edge of a Cliff, which is one of my favourite songs ever. But which is why I wasn't sure if this was my favourite album earlier, because I think it might well be The Escapist. It's my favourite Streets album, which is a controversial choice.
we'll talk about that later on. But
So have you, you said about seeing them in Birmingham. Was that what the comeback shows that you saw?
Yeah, that was...
Did you see him the first time round at all?
No, because I think the kind of like, before I, because I think the kind of like stopped just before I started really touring or... Yeah, no, I think I completely missed that, and I think they announced the tour. I tried to get tickets, but they sold out. They sold out instantly,
yeah.
And I got on the waiting list. And
we're on the waiting list. Was it like 3 nights that they did in Birmingham Academy?
I think it was just the...
There was definitely two.
I think it was one at first. I remember, because I know they did another tour that started this year, and that's when they had at least three in Birmingham.
Oh right, that might be the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure they only had the one here at this time. I was on a waiting list. I got an email saying there was tickets free. I mean, tickets open.
Yeah,
and I got them, and I think to the date it's still the most I've ever spent on a gig.
Oh, was that like a get me in sort of? Thing.
No. It was I think it was like sea tickets or something, or it was like the resellers. But I think
the reseller ones. Yeah,
yeah, not resellers. I think it was basically the company that had the tickets to sale. Like you sign up to a waiting list, and basically their email said, "Oh, we've had other
released other allocation later."
Yeah. So and I managed to get them straight away and stuff, and I remember going, and I've got the set list here, and it was great. I mean, It was great, and it was nice to see some of the songs that I grew up listening to. But I remember coming out of it feeling slightly empty.
Okay.
I think what it was that I think it was like about pushing nearly 50 quid for a gig ticket. It was like 48 quid or something that I paid.
For an Academy gig, that's expensive.
Yeah, for like an Academy too. The Academy, O2 Academy. The main room.
The current Academy, isn't it? The one that's there now. Which is the worst gig venue in the entire universe, which is why I didn't go.
Yeah. I mean, like, I always seem to end up either on the left hand right side underneath the balcony and stuff. And
It's a terrible venue. Yeah. The sight lines in there are rubbish. The vibe's rubbish. I can see why Mike Skinner, being from Birmingham, wanted to play in his hometown.
He should have chose the Institute. The Institute's a much better...
Maybe have to do like 10 nights at the Institute.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great, actually.
Yeah. That's basically night one. You start queuing up on the outside of it, and then you eventually get to it in night nine.
I saw him at Reading Festival 2006.
Oh, okay.
And I've seen him at Glastonbury as well. So I've only ever seen him doing a hour long festival set.
Yeah. I mean, this was like about an hour and a bit, because I think what it was that. Considering I've like, I mean, then people keep asking me about why do you keep going to this many gigs? How can you afford it? And I'm like, because the gig tickets are probably under tenner. but like after paying that, and again, it's probably me and my experience of bigger artists and not seeing many. I think the majority of kind of the biggest artists are around the £30 mark, but they're at least like about you get a good decent set for like. And I've been to gigs where you pay that, and there's like the person's pretty much starts at nine and have to pretty much have the event staff having to throw them
off
the stage. About 10:55, you've got like the event staff like going, this encore's going on really too long, and pretty much dragging the artist off.
You don't see Springsteen 3.5 hours normally.
but like, so you started off about like, I think you started off around eight or half eight, and then about like after about an hour and 10 minutes, you went off. Went off and then basically came on and did about three more songs. It was done in about an hour and 20.
Yeah.
And the set list was pretty good. I mean, if I'd go for the set list.
Is it sort of career spanning kind of thing?
Yeah. So you start off, there's quite a lot of original pirate material and some of this one as well. So you've got Turn the Page, Let's Push Things Forward, Don't Mug Yourself, Everything Is Borrowed.
Excellent.
Has It Come to This, Never Went to Church, Too Much Brandy, It's Too Late, Could Well Be In, Going Through Hell, The Escapist, Heaven for the Weather, Dry Your Eyes, and then that was it. And then the encore was The Wave, Your Wave, God's Wave, God, which is the Dark of the Shadow, one of these new ones that came out, which I didn't really think that much of. Boys Will Be Boys, which I think is another newish one. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Then We Become Heroes, Blinded by the Lights, and then he ended with Fit But You Know It.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't help but... I do think there's... I don't know. I remember thinking about it. I'm still thinking there's, like, massive gaps of, like, songs that he could have well also played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could have done an extra, like, half hour in there.
Yeah, I mean, for example, I mean... Can you? There's one massive single that he had that's not on here, which is When Wasn't Famous. Yeah, yeah, that's not on here.
Which is, to use one of your terms, from his Money and Bling album.
Yeah, that's his Money and Bling album.
I'm glad I got that in there before you did.
Yeah. Oh, I'm loving that. That's kind of a thing there. That's a Facebook post I need to make at some point.
Yeah. Shall we go into Where Else to Go Next then? As we've mentioned a couple of other albums there.
Yeah.
So, what would you suggest for people that want to go for... Because this is an album you've got to listen to the whole thing, isn't it?
Yes.
But if you want to pick other tracks from... Other albums.
Well, for albums in general, I mean, you can pretty much go through most of them apart from the last one.
Computers and Blues.
Yeah. So I've listened to Go Through Hell, and it's kind of like... original. But the ones to perhaps listen to is Original Pirate Material, definitely, because it is kind of neck and neck.
Yeah.
It's really weird in that they're such good albums for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
And like, you got people who say, oh, no, Original Pirate Material is better. In certain lights, it is, because it's a slice of life.
It's more of a... It's a garage album, isn't it? So yeah. It depends if that's you think.
Yeah, I'm going to quote from an article that written by a really good looking chap named Matthew Latham for a site called SetTheTape.com. Beat myself up, but I quite like my own writing on this one. In comparison to the first album, Original Pirate Material was Skinner using his wit to tell small stories of working class Britain. A Grandam Come for Free is a hit TV show becoming a blockbuster movie in comparison. And
okay.
And I believe that, because I think he had a bit more of a, well, possibly had a bit more of a budget, or at least a more of a sway to...
Yeah, I mean, they were both written on his laptop at home.
Yeah.
But the first one was written on, he was living in a little bedsit.
Yeah.
And then when he wrote A Grand Don't Come for Free, he'd bought a flat in London.
Yeah.
Which he wrote it on.
But Original Pirate Material, it's got some great songs, and you can kind of hear the genesis of his, like, philosophy.
That's a band that I wasn't expecting to be an influence on him.
Who, sorry, what?
You said you can hear the genesis in there. That'd be the Mellotrons. No, there aren't any.
Yeah. Badumch. Has It Come to This was like the first song I remember listening to them. It was really great. Don't Mug Yourself's quite funny. Yeah. The Irony of It All is absolutely hilarious and still makes me laugh, which is basically like a massive, like, alcoholic,
yeah,
and basically a weed smoker university student.
Sort of arguing between them, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
It?
And it's just about Skinner's playing both of them, and it's kind of hilarious. And I never realised until much, much, much later, until the advent of YouTube... where there was actually a music video. And I never saw the music video until, like, about, like, 12, 13 years afterwards. And I'm like, it blew my mind, I saw that. The third album, whose name completely escapes me.
Hardest Way to Make It Into Living.
Yeah, yeah. That's his
Money and Bling album.
It's okay. There's some decent, couple of good songs on there. When You Wasn't Famous, I think, is actually a lot funny. It's the closest he's ever gone to sounding like an Eminem song.
And that's the one where there was a lot of speculation on who it was about, because it's a song about when you're famous, it's quite easy to get girls, so he goes after other famous girls, because then it's a bit more of a challenge, and it's all about him having a sort of affair or relationship kind of thing with a female pop star.
Then the other one is
Escapist,
which
is the best one.
I don't know, because I remember having really good memories of it, and then when I went to revisit it, I'd forgotten, like, the second half of the album kind of just, like, fades for me, and I can't remember much of it, because I think once you get to On the Edge of a Cliff, like, pretty much the majority of the singles have gone, and, like, I can't remember much of the end of the
album. You've got, there's The Escapist, he's at the end, the title track?
Oh, yeah, because that's the one with the video where you just see him walking.
I've not seen the video of it.
No, is that one, I'm Not Really Here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the video of that is when it's...
And then what's the opening track, Everything Is Borrowed?
Yeah.
Those two and On the Edge of a Cliff are the three, my three favourite songs he's ever written. And yeah, the rest of the album, there's sort of dips in between it, but they hold it all up.
Yeah, I think On the Edge of the Cliff, considering I've just said that this might, that the first two are probably Bank of Moses, On the Edge of the Cliff might be like my favourite Street song.
Oh yeah, mine, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, it's a shame it didn't fit on, it doesn't fit on the first two, but it's... It's amazing. If you're not, it's basically the idea being that basically someone who's going to contemplate suicide, and a man walks past, says, "Yeah, I did that thing.
I've been there.
Yeah, been there." And then comes up with like one of the best choruses ever written, which is basically like pretty much
for millions of years, for the onset of time, every single one of your ancestors survived. Every single person on your mum and dad's side successfully moved on and passed on to your life. I think got a couple of words wrong there.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, if none of your ancestors did the nasty at the exact moment, then you wouldn't be here. And then basically, then kind of like drifts off, and then like the narrator of the song kind of then tells the same thing to someone else who was looking at the rock and stuff. And it's just like a really beautiful song.
Yeah,
it's just like, because one thing that
song must have saved people's lives.
Yeah, must have done.
I don't think you can have a greater accolade than that.
Each album has its own distinct theme, flavour, and is very encapsulated in itself.
Even with the artwork.
Yeah.
It all fits sort of with it.
Yeah. I mean, for example, like, Original Pirate Material is, again, the slice of working life. Grand Old Comfort Free. Okay, it's the same kind of, like, thing, but it's a completely different feel. It's a narrative. It's a fictional narrative.
Yeah.
Which explores so much. The Money and Bling album is basically the how to deal with fame. The Escapist is the philosophical side, which he touches on in the Original Pirate Material, because he touches on quite a few philosophers and kind of like introspective stuff. And that kind of, whilst not explicit, is fuels a lot of the main character's decisions in A Grand Old Comfort Free. Yeah. And Computer and Blues, I can't remember anything about it.
That was the impression I got, which is why I've never listened to it.
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard any good things about Computer and Blues, really.
Yeah. It's a bit of a shame, because I think he always had the idea that he wanted a 5-disc box set. Okay. And I've got... And I think from what I gathered, I think he kind of wanted that, but then when he got to do Computer and Blues, he just couldn't. I think he just lost much interest, and he wanted to kind of bookend it with something that's similar to Original Pirate Material, but it just never clicked properly.
Have you read his book?
I've not actually, no.
No, I've heard it's really good. I've got it on my list of books to get, but I haven't. I got a quote from it about A Grand Don't Come For Free, which would have fitted in really well earlier. where we were talking about the sort of screenwriting kind of thing. He put here, "The reason I decided to write A Grand Don't Come For Free as episodes from a single unfolding narrative was because I'd got into my songwriting manuals and books by Hollywood screenwriting gurus, so Robert McKee, Sid Field and John Truby. And I wanted to try and put what I'd learnt from them into practice. Every song needs a drama at the centre of it, and once you have the drama, the song writes itself. That's what I firmly believed and still do believe. I'm not alone in this conviction either. It's something pretty much all rappers seem to be sure about."
Okay.
But yeah, it's good. It's a good disc. Oh, well done for picking it.
Yeah, and I think before we wrap up, I've always kind of had like upper tier albums and like upper tier favourites and lower tier favourites. So like your top 10. Like top 10 albums and like the ones underneath that are like favourites.
Yeah.
But like, you probably rank a bit...
Favourites, but aren't Disintegration by The Cure.
Yeah, unfortunately, that one's not on mine, unfortunately. But,
I've just not listened to it enough.
I don't think I've listened to it, actually.
Right, that I might have to pick that in the future.
Yeah, okay, so that's what... So I'm guessing what Chris picking next time. Like it. But I forgot what my point was now. So, like, for example, my top 10 albums, there's now, like, about 14 because of, like, new albums I've listened to. Pretty much came to, like, knocking ones off there. And I've just come to the point, you know, outside it. My top 10's have got at least 15 things in it. And Grand Old Comfort Free was always kind of near the top of the lower tier. Because I would rank it kind of, like, the same level as I put Kate Nash. But I'm thinking about it and, like, it was never in my top 10 because there was like 10 albums that I'd probably rate more. But now if I'm there just threw it all away and says my like top 10 has got more than 10 in it, I can't see any reason why I don't think this should be in that.
Seems fair.
Yeah. I mean, I love that album, and I seem to find myself falling for it every time I listen to it, discovering more. I think I've just learned more about it talking to you this evening.
Yeah.
And it's got to be in that. It's got to move on to the upper echelon.
So in the process of doing this podcast, you now like it even more. So that's really cool.
I know, yeah. And I thought I couldn't do that.
No. Awesome. Yeah. That can't be bad at all.
Yeah.
Do you want your podcast back?
I don't know.
Go on.
Yeah. Oh, go on then. I'll take the reins. Come here, boy. Here we go. Right, okay. Oh, I forgot what this chair felt like. So, okay. I just need to remember how I do this now. So, the last bit is the important bit. And as I think I said with the Kate Nash episode, as much as I like to, I'm doing it so I can talk about albums I love, I don't want control over the playlist. And I do quite like the fact that it's basically user-generated. It unfortunately, it does mean that some people pick 10-minute songs.
Who would do such a thing?
Yeah, 10-minute songs and like make an eight and make it like a then 8-track playlist like an hour. But I do want the choices to still be by the guests. So, and as much as I really like to have picked one, and but with this being this album, I didn't want the stress of trying to pick one. I'm going to leave it to Colin to immortalise A Grand Old Comfort Free for me. So no pressure whatsoever.
No pressure at all.
Yeah. So which song do you want to add?
Well, it's the one that we both thought we'd probably end up talking about loads and haven't, so let's talk about it now.
Okay.
Empty Cans.
Yes, let's go.
It's the climax of the album.
And the longest.
And the longest. I've got to keep up tradition, haven't I? So I've picked two songs out of the now 20-song long playlist.
Yeah.
Only average song about 3-4 minutes long. So I reckon I've probably got about
20%.
About 20% of the playlist is all mine.
You're the Limp Bizkit episode of the playlist.
Yeah. You wait till I choose Dope Smoker by Sleep as one of my later picks. This album is one track long, which is 65 minutes.
Oh, God.
Which track are you going to choose, Colin? Well, Dope Smoker.
The Radio X.
Right. Empty Cans this is the main bit that we were warning you for spoilers about, basically. The end of the story, it's kind of got two endings. So he's just found out that Simone has been sleeping with Dan.
Mm-hmm.
And split up with her and Dry Your Eyes, which you all know because it was a number one hit.
And for some reason, I've not even spoken about it.
No, because we don't need to.
No.
Everyone knows it. And it's a good song.
Yeah.
But it's not as good as Empty Cans.
Yeah.
So Empty Cans is, the song starts and it's a really fucking dark ending. It's like, everyone hates me, I hate everyone, everything's gone wrong. He calls out, his TV's still broken, he's still not got his £1,000. He calls out the TV repairman.
From the Yellow Pages.
From the Yellow Pages. Phones up the TV repairman to come out and take his TV away to fix it. The TV repairman comes back round to his house to tell him something about that he's found something that's fallen down the back of the TV, and he thinks that he's just trying to rip him off. So he ends up having a physical fight with the TV repairman, who tells him to fuck off and legs it. Then we get a rewind.
Yeah.
And the music starts to get more major key and lighter. A piano comes in.
Yeah. It's the same drum beat.
It's the same drum beat. It's still got the same synth drone in the background. There are a couple of things that drop out from the first bit and a couple of things that are brought in, but not much drops out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another track where it evolves as it goes through.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's a pessimistic ending, which is that one.
It's basically the end of Wayne's World.
Exactly, it is.
Yeah, that's the bad ending. Let's have the good ending.
Yeah. Now let's do the Scooby-Doo ending. He never did that. He should have done that as a secret track 10 minutes later.
Goes, let's find out who you really are, Dan. It's old man Smith.
So, after the rewind, it starts off exactly the same, that he's surrounded by empty cans of beer and he's all pissed off. But then Scott, his mate, phones him up and says, look, do you want me to come around and try and help you fix this telly? So Scott comes round. It's the first time in the bad ending he told Scott to fuck off.
Yeah.
So Scott comes round. They start trying to fix the TV and find out that something's fallen down inside the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
They open it up and it's his £1,000.
Yeah.
Which dates it quite a bit, because in tellies these days, where's that going to fit?
Yeah.
I can't even rest it on the top.
And I remember when I posted the link to my article like on Facebook like about a year and a half ago about Grand Theft Auto 3, and I said, yeah, this is probably going to be the longest article out of the lot of them. And a friend of mine goes, oh, it's brilliant, it's a great album. But I do sit back and I wonder how the bloody hell £1,000 broke a telly.
It was in coins.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's obviously fallen out with Simone and Dan.
Yeah.
But he's still mates with Scott.
Yeah.
He has a personal realisation, like you quoted earlier, where, you know, his mates have got to look out for themselves sometimes, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And then there's even a new girl that he's started talking to and things starting going well. So it's got a nice, happy ending as well.
Because it has that, again, going on that philosophical thing, the last lines are like the end of something that wasn't meant to be and the start of what was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, but they even say, like, the start of bad times to come.
Yeah.
So, like, it kind of, it's that...
The beginning of hard times to come.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not the happy ending.
It's kind of bittersweet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of bittersweet, but it's, again, it's, if you go back, when you mention the realism aspect of it, you've got the fact that, okay, there's, like, this natural kind of, like, immediate high of, okay, things aren't going to be that bad, but it's going to hit me again, but at least I think I'm in a better mindset to be able to deal with it. Which I think is a quite... Yeah. It's probably the healthiest thing that he says on the album.
Definitely.
And it's a really nice way of ending it.
Apart from stop sharking a minute to get chips and drinks.
But, yeah, and it just... You just finish... You just listen to it and it's like, oh, that's great. And if you got it on repeat, you suddenly hear the...
It was supposed to be so easy.
And you end up listening to it again and I'm like, ah, it's just... Oh, it's just... Bloody brilliant album. Yeah, so Empty Cans.
That's going on the playlist.
No, it's a great... No, Two Fair is a great choice, and it's broken up enough not to feel like it's one long song.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm now thinking of which album to do next time that's got a really long song on it. I can find that. I'm going to get banned. Brilliant.
Yeah. It says, all good things must come to an end, as shall this podcast. Before we sign off, I want to say, Colin, thank you ever so much for being the second host of the Matt Pick section, and for coming up again, and we'll definitely be seeing you again on the right side of the microphone this time.
That sounds like a good plan.
On the guest part, so get thinking of other discs to do it.
Oh, I have many planned.
Yeah,
probably as many as you have.
Probably, yeah. Oh man, my spreadsheet keeps getting longer and longer.
Also, I've got two co-hosts that want to do them with you as well. So
okay,
I need to get them in touch with you.
Yes, definitely. So, talking of co-hosts of a podcast that you do, if people want to find you and listen to your podcasts, where can they find you?
Well, we've got two podcasts now. So there's We Dig Music, which is my old one, which is we take two bands each month, a well-known band and a less well-known band, and jabber on about them. You can find both of them, you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com, but on Twitter, it's WeDigMusicPcast. My other podcast, which we actually want people to come on, be guests on, so have a listen if you like it, get in touch. Is called Free With This Month's Issue, which last time I appeared on here, we hadn't started doing yet.
No.
We were just in the process of setting it up. Basically, each month we listen to a CD from an old music magazine. So a free CD from like Kerrang or Enemy or Rock Sound or Metal Hammer or Uncut and so on, Q. And basically talk about its horrors and delights contained within.
Yeah, and... I listen to both and they're very, very entertaining. especially if Ian doesn't like them. I think.
Which happens a fair bit.
Yeah, because Pissed Off Ian is one of the funniest things. But yeah, I think pretty much if you just listen to the Oasis episode.
Oh, God, yeah. He really, really does it.
Yeah.
Basically, that's me defending them a bit, but still seeing totally the bad side, yeah, and the other two completely hating them.
Yeah.
That's on We Dig Music. But yeah, free with this month's issue on Twitter is at this month's issue. And if you just want to jabber at me, at Mogwai Fear Satan is my Twitter, y'all. As the strange American people say. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, Colin, I want to say thank you yet again.
No worries.
This. And I don't know if you've noticed, again, this is another one where I'm actually facing the person, facing the person and speaking to them in person. It's kind of weird not talking to a microphone in front of a PC.
I know where you live because I'm in your house.
Ah, oh, shit. but no, again, it's been great. Thank you for making the effort as well and bringing up your mini podcast recording studio as well.
That's fine.
So it's probably going to be the best sounding one we've had so far.
No pressure.
No, yeah, no pressure whatsoever.
You're editing it, so that's your fault.
Fair enough. So yeah, thank you ever so much.
No worries. Bye.
You've been listening to Pick a Disc, and I've been your host, Matthew Layla. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This podcast network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/Pick a Disc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.